this year's Speaker, Vernon Jordan.
Thank you, Bob Bottoms, for that wonderful and kind and generous introduction. And thank you for your extraordinary leadership of DePaul University for these past 25 about years. It is a distinguished honor to represent the class of 1957 here at our 50th class reunion. And I thank you, classmates, for the privilege of speaking. We came here 54 years ago in the morning of our lives. We return now 50 years from our graduation in the evening of our lives. In the time between then and now, we have seen the world, and we have made our contributions to it in our own individual ways, consistent with our aspirations, our opportunities, and our values. We have returned this week for all the wholesome reasons alumni return for reunions, to greet old friends once again, and to see the college of our youth dressed in its modern finery, to witness firsthand the new expansive nature park and the Green Center for the Performing Arts, the renovated Percy Julian Science and Mathematics Center, and the enormous indoor tennis and track center. And yet, we mourn just a little bit, do we not, for the absence of Bowman Gym, Florence Hall, Locust Manor, and the double decker. And no doubt many of you will walk over and reminisce about your time in Roseanne Park. I would like to go with some of my MHA buddies to find the second covered bridge. Most of all, we have returned, pushed and pulled by our abiding affection for and appreciation of this university, because DePaul University is where we took our first great steps toward crossing boundaries of possibility. One could say that America itself was rooted in that notion. That is, the benefit that can come from crossing boundaries of possibility, be they physical boundaries, an ocean or a great river, a mountain range or vast plains, or be they conceptual boundaries such as developing the most expansive notion of the rights of individuals the world has ever known. That was what the delegates to the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia did when they proclaimed, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Yes, the reality has been that until very recently, the practice of that idea in America has been profoundly limited on account of race, creed, color, gender, and previous condition of servitude. But the idea that individuals ought to be able to rise as high and go as far as their ability can take them is what animated those originally left out of the American dream to make America be America. For the class of 1957, DePauw is where we gained a greater sense of what lay beyond the many narrow confines, the boundaries of that time, and a sharpened sense of what boundaries we wanted to cross. Here at DePauw is where we gained a fuller sense of the knowledge and training required if our ambitions were to be more than idle thought. Here at DePauw is where we could look beyond the boundaries of our upbringing, our own lives, and even this campus, and see an America and a world in which many individuals and many peoples were crossing boundaries of possibility in significant ways and often with shocking rapidity. For example, in 1953, I dare say most Americans paid scant attention to the revolutionary ferment in a small Southeast Asian country called Vietnam, or a clutch of European colonies in Black Africa, or to the heated declarations of a Cuban revolutionist named Fidel Castro. In 1953, many Americans perhaps still considered space exploration the stuff of Buck Rogers-type fantasies. But in the fall of 1957, a few months after our graduation, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, precipitating a frenetic burst of activity in the American space program and a revolution in the American government's commitment to education at all levels. In 1953, racial segregation in the 11 states of the old Confederacy was the law in the 11 states of the old Confederacy, and a custom which had the force of law in the rest of the nation, including Indiana and Greencastle. But by the time we graduated, the United States Supreme Court in several rulings had repudiated the underpinnings of legalized racism. The Montgomery bus boycott of 1955 and the desegregation of Little Rock's Central High School in 1957 had brought Black Americans' nonviolent civil rights movement into the streets of America and thereby awakened the dormant conscience of white America, which began to understand that the civil rights movement was not a movement just for the benefit of Black Americans, but rather for the benefit of all Americans. At our 25th reunion, where I was privileged to talk, I described our college years as the great divide, the period between two eras. Then we and our nation stood on the threshold of a new era, an era of enormous positive possibility, even as it was shadowed by the threat of nuclear war. Today, I believe we also exist in a great divide, a period between two eras. Our current divide has been made brutally plain by the profoundly dangerous global terrorism launched against the world by people who are the embodiment of evil, and the appearance of such other threats as AIDS, widespread poverty and hunger, and global warming that also imperil humanity's very existence. And yet, I believe that the new era we are facing has the potential of crossing boundaries of enormous positive possibility if we can seize the moment and act out our better impulses. Certainly, one can see in this country, embedded in the election results of last November, that voters have demanded a return to the practice of common sense politics, that is, the old bipartisan tradition of American politics, otherwise known as win some, lose some, that served this nation so well during the 20th century. To my mind, these positive developments underscore something Albert Einstein said long ago. To paraphrase, in every crisis lies opportunity. The opportunity exists for us, proud 50-year alumni of DePauw as well. I began these remarks by saying that we have seen the world and made our contributions to it. Let me leave you now by saying that we are not finished. Our work is not done. That given the condition of the world and our country are in, notwithstanding, with all that we have accomplished, with all the experience and wisdom and smarts, we have a duty and a responsibility to contribute more to DePauw, to America, and to the world. We have a duty and responsibility to contribute not just for ourselves, but for our grandchildren, and for the least of these, our brothers and sisters, who cry out the world over asking, pleading, is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? We are not finished yet because, as Melville wrote, we cannot live for ourselves alone. Our lives are connected by a thousand invisible threads, and along these sympathetic fibers, our actions run as causes and return to us as results. Certainly, we will have to contribute in different ways than we've done in the past, and perhaps the contributions themselves will be entirely different from what we've done before. But DePauw University long ago taught us well to perceive and conceive the boundaries of possibility that need to be crossed. My classmates, 50 years later, that remains our charge to keep, our calling to fulfill, our rendezvous with destiny. And so, my classmates, I leave you with the words of the old Irish proverb I recited here 25 years ago. May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind always be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. And may the rain fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hands. Thank you.